This is Sphinx Radio, exploring the enigmas of the ages and the puzzles of the present, with your host, William H. Kennedy.
This is the Sphinx Radio 3rd anniversary program. It was 3 years ago today, September 1st, 2005, that I first started this program, and I planned for it to be a 3-year project. This was supposed to be the last episode of Sphinx Radio, but I'm having so much fun that I've decided to extend it for another year at least. We'll see after that. I'll commit to another year to doing this weekly program. And today we will be joined by Brad Steiger, the famous writer of nonfiction books. Brad has sold over 17 million books, and he has written over 160 books in an amazing career. In this episode, we will be discussing his book, Conspiracies and Secret Societies, The Complete Dossier. And you can get this book at www.bradandsherry.com. bradandsherry.com, that's A-N-D, bradandsherry.com, and this is quite simply the best book on conspiracies I've ever read, and I've been reading them for quite some time now, many, many decades, and this is really the best dossier or encyclopedia type book under one cover I have seen on conspiracies and secret societies. And we will get to our interview with Brad in a few minutes. I thought I'd just go over a few things that are upcoming with my writing and work. My book, Occult History, Collected Essays, 1994 to 2008, is out. You can get it at williamhkennedy.com. And these are all the articles I have published over the years, various magazines and academic journals. I have articles there that were published by people like R.A. Gilbert, Houston Smith, Tracy R. Twyman, Brad Steiger, Jeff Rentz, people like that who've published articles of mine over the years were kind enough to let me do this reprint called Occult History, and it's a fascinating book. I do a lot with the Da Vinci Code stuff. I was into that sort of thing long before Dan Brown came along, and you can see my take on a lot of that. The big news for the coming 2008-2009 year for me, I have my year run September 1 to September 1, is that I will be editing and writing introductions to some of the works by Kurt Saxon, the father of survivalism. He coined the phrase. And Kurt's a very provocative and interesting figure, I must say. And the first book of his I'm going to reissue is called Keeping the Score on Modern Prophets. And he originally wrote this in 1974. And in it, he chronicles how various psychics like Gene Dixon have, exploited the American public and pretty much ripped a lot of people off, including presidents of the United States and everything else. So Kurt Saxon also describes his sojourn through various mystical groups like the Rosicrucian Amok group that's headquartered in San Jose, California. Kurt Saxon was an early member of Anton LaVey's Church of Satan. He was also involved with Scientology and various UFO cults in the 1950s and 60s, primarily why he was a proofreader for the Los Angeles Herald Examiner. That was his job. He'd hear about these groups through the newspaper, and he'd go out and join a lot of them. And that will be a really great book. I'm working on that now, and it will be out very, very soon. My film, Lucifer's Lodge, Satanic Ritual Abuse in the Catholic Church, which has been long delayed on release because of sound problems, will definitely be released this fall. And check my webpage, williamhkennedy.com, between now and Christmas, I'll have it out and selling. So please, people, don't send me any more emails about the Lucifer's Lodge film. I get them almost every day. It is coming. It's a great documentary, and I know you'll like it. There's just a few technical sound problems I have to iron out, and I'm busy with other projects. So not everything gets done in the time frame I would like or you would like, and I apologize for that, but I do my best. Now, to get on to Brad Steiger's book, Conspiracies and Secret Societies, The Complete Dossier, as I said before, it's really the very best book I have seen on this subject ever. And the parts I liked about it best were that Steiger covers the three big occult groups that politicians are involved with, and that is specifically the Bohemian Grove in California, the Bilderberg Group, and the Skull and Bone Society at Yale. Now, the Skull and Bone Society was founded in 1832 by William Russell, who went over to Germany and got a charter from a German university from a Masonic type group. At the time, Freemasonry was being suppressed by President John Quincy Adams in the United States, who saw it as an evil entity, and the Skull and Bones acted as a kind of replacement organization at Yale University. And it's very interesting because a lot of the philosophy behind the Skull and Bone Society is certainly satanic, but it draws a lot from the German philosopher Hegel, who Russell had known in Germany when he went over there. And with that said, we will bring on Brad Steiger, ask him what he thinks of the Skull and Bone Society, and Hegel in particular. Brad Steiger, welcome to Sphinx Radio.
Thank you so much, Bill. Hegelian philosophy now. The individual must be surrendered to the state. Now, of course, we saw that Nazism, I mean, that was just all right with Hitler and the socialists rising up a couple centuries later. And we see that even though fascism and communism are supposed to be polar opposites, we see that Lenin also, you know, the absolute complete control by the state of the individual. And then immediately we think of the analogy, the metaphor, 1984, you know, showing in a metaphorical sense what happens when Big Brother takes over. Now, he returned to Yale, and this is when the Skull and Bones then began. And people insist it's not just your typical beer-swilling fraternity group, but it is this group that takes an oath to one another and to the state. And there seems to be a great deal of evidence to support this. But nobody knows, because no one gets in to see. Some people claim they have, and we've had some sensationalistic movies about Skull and Bones. And then others say, well, you know, that wasn't fiction. That was fact. And it's the same way that the Bilderbergers, that's fact. That's named after the Bilderberg hotel chain in the Netherlands. And it's a group of movers and shakers, the elite, the very wealthy, the very well-connected, who meet once a year. So the exaggerated claims that some people make about these groups, they could be easily resolved if the press, if others were allowed to attend these meetings, if these were free and open meetings. But they're not. It's the same way with Bohemian Grove. We have the same thing, Bill. We have the movers and shakers, no women allowed. We have politicians. We have mayors of many large cities. And again, if this meets outside of San Francisco, we should clarify that. Bohemian Grove,
right,
outside of San Francisco. And the things that are said to go on there, you know, the pagan worship and bowing to a large owl, well, You know, all you have to do in a free and open society, as we're supposed to have, is simply allow the media to attend. But not doing that, they're going to foster all kinds of conspiracy theories.
Well, certainly so, but the actual rituals they perform is what I find the most disturbing about them, especially when you consider, like, with the skull and bones in the last election, George W. Bush, John Kerry,
right,
were both members, and, you know, Donald Etna, who was an attorney for Ralph Nader, was in the same class as George Bush and the Skull and Bones, so that was really a case of which Skull and Bones men or which Skull and Bones controlled candidate you wanted. It didn't have very much to do with Republicans, Democrats, and Independents.
Now, the only thing I suppose, and I'm not a member of either of the dominant parties, but with Kerry, at least, you had a kind of a new family entering in. With Bush, you had a pedigreed member of Skull and Bones, and of course the Bush family.
Well, it's interesting because Kerry, on his mother's side of the family, is actually a Winthrop from here in Massachusetts. He's actually a very strong bloodline. Name was also a member of the Skull and Bones, and you get names associated.
Oh, that's right.
Pillsbury.
That's right.
Another name, and it's quite frightening. I always give the example of about a year and a half ago at one New Year's Eve, I stayed in and I watched American Experience, which was hosted by Donald McClellan, who's a Skull and Bones man, you know, famous PBS speaker. And after that, they had George W. Bush on for a convener leaf. And I put Gilbert Doyle on it. And I just realized that, oh my God, I mean, we're the Skull and Bones Society. They're in my living room.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere.
If you look at that. Again, of course, we have, you know, this remarkable thing with the Walker family, the Prescott Bushes, and that legacy as well. That they were, as I'm sure you know, Bill, they were providing oil, they were financing Hitler's rise to power, literally. And it took, you know, in 1942, the government had to stop them, make them cease under the Trading with the Enemy Act. And then some people, and many historians, say that one of the principal reasons the Nazis lost the war is because they literally ran out of gas, not figuratively, but literally.
Petrol, yeah.
Yes, and they tried to have petrol substitutes. Their scientists were working on that, but they weren't able to come up with anything satisfactory. So here again, how did they get started? Well, they were, you know, that particular link, providing gas to the Nazis to really perform their juggernaut horror across all of Europe and the Blitzkrieg in England and so forth, to think that that was really set in motion by good old American capitalism.
Prescott Bush.
Prescott Bush, yeah. And Walker and then the family. And then, of course, George H.W., he enlists at an early age. And some say, you know, it was in shame trying to compensate for his family's misdeeds. But then, of course, we have the Bushes involved with Saudis in the oil business.
All right, that came out in that Michael Moore film. Yeah.
Yeah.
And very strong ties, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, we don't have to rely on Michael Moore's word for this. I mean, it's a matter of public record. And now, of course, Bush Senior, Bush 41, involved with the Carlyle Group immediately after he left office. And the Carlyle Group, again, being a strong Saudi oil group. And then this strange kind of quote-unquote coincidence that Bush 41 is having lunch with one of the brothers of Osama bin Laden at the very hour that World Trade Center is being attacked on 9/11.
Very, very strange. And another brother was having dinner with the fellow Hinckley who shot Reagan on the day that Reagan was shot.
Yeah, one of the sons.
One of the sons, yeah.
And the brother of W, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're very odd on that, on two major tragedies,
you know,
Bush hovering around.
Bill, if you wrote these things as a novel, if you did them as a movie, everyone would say it was too fantastic, right?
Too far-fetched to be true.
Too far-fetched. That can't be true. But yet, it happened. I mean, it is. This is a matter of record.
Definitely so. And when you really look at even the Skull and Bones initiation ceremony, where they drink out of a skull that either has blood or mock blood in it, and they kneel before a devil figure, and they're dubbed by a black knight, which is kind of an infernal trinity and an anti-pope kind of figure. It's quite disturbing that the people on the top levels of our society would actually do something like that.
Yeah, and I think again, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Sure.
But I think again, that does go back to 1832. That does go back to the German student group. It really goes back, you know, it has a heavy, at least to me, Bill, do you agree? It has kind of a heavy gothic tone to it.
Oh, definitely so. That's what they're tapping into.
Right.
And in the book, Secrets of the Tomb, that came out, the woman who wrote that actually pointed out that the original initiation ceremony was the student dressed as Lucifer himself, dubbed the students Knights of the Order, but I guess they must have found that disturbing because they watered it down a little and entered into some more characters, but it equates to the same thing, really.
It does. It does. So this is very disturbing to the person who begins to examine it and begin to trace it. The thing that really getting into conspiracy, I've been collecting conspiracies since I was 11 years old. I mean, they've always fascinated me because I've always been a student of history. And I began, I was fortunate, my grandmother was a town librarian, so I had access to enormous, and then she had a wonderful library of her own, which was primarily history books. And I would read, and I was fascinated by them, but these were very old history books, many of them, and some of the stories they told were very different from the text that I was reading in school. And that began to intrigue me, you know, what is the truth? Who is telling the truth? Is it just the side that won the war, and that's what goes down as history? I've always been fascinated to go into the stocks of the library when I was at college and just dig into the old volume, and that's where it began for me. And then Sherry, of course, she progressed along the same line. She is an ordained Protestant minister, but she began to question so many things and began to explore. And we were fascinated when we finished this book that how many of the individuals, and not that we agreed with them, some we were totally divergent philosophies, but we had actually met, we had actually spoken with, and the number of black ops agents and scientists at crucial government positions who had come to us throughout the years with a story, with stories that differed so much from what we were reading in the press. The other thing that fascinated me, and of course, you know me, Bill, as an author in the paranormal, and so I've always been fascinated with secret societies and the occult. Not that I've been an occultist, but I'm fascinated with studying it and seeing how it offers a dark mirror of history. The thing I was fascinated with is how many, I won't dare say all, because one should never say all, but how many conspiracies had that dark, shadowy hand of the occult in the background.
It's not far away, and as you say, this is from standard history books. This isn't from flaky theories.
No.
I mean, when you consider that the American and Italian revolutions were set in motion by Freemasons, George Washington as well, I mean, right there at the pinnacle of what we are today as Freemasonry. It's right in the background, a very occult order there again.
And it goes all the way back to the ancient Egyptians, the Babylonians, and it perpetuates. Now, I'm not saying that, I mean, the what we try to do in the book always, as you see, Bill, is to present the historical Illuminati, the historical Freemasons, you know, the picture that we have of various groups. Now, the average age of the Freemasons today is 63. So I don't think, you know, we really get steer that this fraternal organization that we have in our neighborhoods is rising up against us. But then there is the shadowy group behind that may be pulling the strings worldwide. And I'm not going to call them Freemasons. I don't know what to call them. But I think there is this new world order. I used to say that and kind of chuckle, you know, it's kind of a joke. Well, look out, the new world order. But I've concluded, Bill, and I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, but call it what you will, there does seem to be, once again, a shadowy, elite, super powerful, super wealthy group of individuals pulling the strings behind the scenes.
I would agree with you 100% on that, and they're so powerful, they don't even hide that much anymore. You know, like Alex Jones has been on the show, you're on Jeff Rentz and Coast to Coast. He snuck in there and filmed their the Bohemian Grove's Very Strange Ceremony.
Yes.
And they really don't hide too much anymore. They really don't care, because most people in the mainstream media, they always seem to minimize or trivialize any metaphysical or occult aspects to what's going on out there.
And that's a conspiracy.
And that's a kind of conspiracy.
That is a conspiracy.
Now, when you consider that the founder of Federal Express, whose name evades me right now, is a Skull and Bonesman as well, and just look at how many Federal Express ads are on TV, or how many Pillsbury Doughboy ads are on, or how many Heinz Ketchup ads are on. So I think these advertisers are certainly, they have a say, you know, he who pays the piper calls the tune.
That's right.
So the mainstream news media, they're not going to latch on to these aspects. They'll always ignore them or downplay them. And all sorts of things, like those kids who burnt that those churches down in Alabama were practicing Satanists.
Well,
but you didn't hear anything.
No, what did we hear? What did we hear?
It was alcohol.
It was a joke.
Yep.
Gone bad.
Yep.
What does that mean? I mean, it made no sense. Sherry and I looked at one another and said, how could you, I don't care what your religious affiliation is, I don't care if you're an atheist, how could you think burning a church is a joke? But that, I mean, I heard that repeated 20 times that night. It was a joke gone bad. Now, I can see it if we're part of a satanic ritual gone not bad, but exactly as they wished it to.
Oh, definitely so. And I can understand people getting drunk and burning one church down.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Eight churches, that's, you know, what do they continually drink for 2 or 3 months or something?
And when does the joke go on? When do we get... But there again, Bill, kids getting drunk and accidentally burning something, how would they dare call it a joke unless the joke is against the rest of society?
Sure, that's the joke.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
That society would buy that and say these were just some... But now there was another thing when they interviewed them. I didn't hear a single nay to the overwhelming consensus that these were bright, attractive, charming, was used many times, charming students. Now, again, I'm not singling them out. I'm just saying that isn't that the perfect description of every great deceiver down through history?
Well, they always present themselves as good and for the good and upbeat. Hitler did that. Stalin did that. You know, Pol Pot did that. They're not going to give you an evil message. You never see the hook and the bait with these people.
No,
really
no.
Don't.
And there again, with Nazism, there again, we have to see, Bill, And you know this. The number of occult organizations of which Hitler was a member.
Oh, yeah, the Thule Society, right, and various groups, sure.
Thule Society, the Black Sun, the Vril.
Yeah.
They were using mediums then to contact entities in outer space. This idea of the UFO contactee, that didn't begin in the late 40s and early 50s. That began at least in the 1880s, where mediums, and I'm not picking on mediums now, but individuals who claim to go into trance and contact beings from outer space. Now, again, you can be cynical, you can be harsh, and I don't mean to be, but someone could say, well, they were doing that, you know, for centuries, claiming whether they called them angels. Look at alchemy. Why is alchemy in there? Because alchemists believed that they were commanding angels. Now, any angel that does the command of an earthling, you know that's deceit. You know that's deception.
They're not going to listen to us.
No, but if these are fallen angels, call them demons, if you will, that are seeking to control us, they're going to play along. Yes, Master, what do you wish? And because they're working their own agenda, not this idiot human who thinks he's going to cash in on the lottery.
Right, right. That's a very good point about alchemy. I never thought about it quite like that before, but the commanding of angels to transmute base metals into gold is at the heart of it, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, every alchemic of text deals with the commanding of angels, spirits, guardian entities, whatever you want to call them.
Oh, sure. And there was just a show on PBS about Isaac Newton, who we all think as the father of modern science. And I did an MA in philosophy, and he was pretty much promoted as an empirical scientist, which he was not. He was actually more, he wrote more on alchemy than anything else.
Exactly. Exactly. But how many people know that, Bill?
Very few. Rene Descartes as well, a book just came out. He was actually in search of occult mysticism for a great deal.
Go down the list.
Right. I mean, they edit things out, and they've edited these things out, as you were saying earlier. You almost have to go to older books.
Yeah, and let us hope, and I don't mean to be egotistical, but I hope people will go to our book. Because we try to present as objectively as possible, sometimes there are many sides to a question, as you know, not just two, but we try to be objective. We try to present this book so it can be used as a tool for individuals to peel away all the dross that may be on top of any historical explanation and begin to think for themselves. I mean, I'm a former teacher, and I still get on my soapbox about education. What has happened to education in this country? Don't even get me started. But I still believe that education is one of our clearest roads to salvation as a society.
Definitely so. And, you know, the dumbing down of America is certainly part of this overall agenda. You know, that's a big part of what they do.
Again, you have to say this is a conspiracy. That's what the New World Order, or call them whatever you will, that would be so advantageous. That really makes us dumb sheep willing to listen to anyone who has a good rap, anyone who gets up there and does a good hip-hop rap that, you know, the masses will go along with. And how it has become fashionable to speak as though one is illiterate. How it has become fashionable to speak as though you are in contempt of education. That's what we have now, Bill.
It's very frightening, and it's widespread.
Incredibly.
I mean,
horribly.
And if you notice how people are now, that they don't even look both ways when they cross the street anymore.
No, because they will not take personal responsibility.
It's unbelievable, even to the point of that. And just to pop back a bit, there's one thing I really noticed. I'm not sure if you notice this yourself, but the Bush family and the Skull and Bones, population control has been a big part of their concern. Cutting down the population. And just to point out, all famines are man-made. There's actually enough food produced to feed the 6 billion people on this planet.
Sure, just some
people, some people choose to burn their grain instead of giving it to people
right.
that are hungry.
Right.
That's the problem.
I agree.
And that is the justification for population control. Now, George W. Bush's niece, Lauren Bush, is actually a very attractive model. On a lot of cover of magazines. Mm-hmm. I was quite shocked to see her on TV. She went down to Latin America, and what she said really stunned me. She said she was going down there to promote education amongst illiterate people with the goal the more education people have, the less children they produce,
mm-hmm.
was her reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a kid 19, 20 years old, you know, who's at an Ivy League school, and I'm there, oh my God, she's this flashy, beautiful model, and she's playing right into the same agenda.
Jeb's daughter, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's playing into the same agenda that Prescott Bush, I guess her great-grandfather, was doing.
That's part of the New World Order agenda also, if you want to attribute it to, you know, this shadowy group. But at the same token, we say, yes, I mean, that has been true throughout history, that the more educated have perhaps on the average fewer children, except you have exceptions like the Kennedy family, of course, very wealthy. But
well, the Irish, you can't count. I'm the youngest of eight kids. We're like rabbits.
Okay.
We go against the New World Order in that sense.
but, Bill, what about bird flu? What about all these? Now, I've received, I don't know how many, because, you know, we've been speaking on a number of talk shows to promote our book, and I don't know how many scientists, chemists, and so forth have been sending us emails saying that, you know, that this has all the earmarks of a created virus. All the earmarks of a laboratory virus. And we can only, I mean, why the most horrible previous virus influenza known to civilization, that of 1918, as one chemist asked rhetorically, why did they dig up, you know, one of the corpses and recreate this in a laboratory? Well, the concept, I guess, that we are to think was the reason is to create a vaccine in case this comes around again. And then, lo and behold, here comes bird flu. That's supposed to be the most deadly virus ever in the history of Earth. Now, one of the goals, as we're saying, of whether it's Skull and Bones, whether it's the Bohemian, whether it's the Bilderbergers, whether it's Illuminati, is to decrease the population.
Now, I've heard a figure that the shadowy hand, and I tend to call him the Illuminati, or is
that right?
Or as my friend Malachi Martin used to call them, the super force, when they get mean.
Yeah.
But I'll use both terms.
Sure.
This shadowy hand, now, they seem to want the world down to about 500,000 people or 500 million people, is that correct, out of 6 billion? That figure keeps popping up.
We have right around 6 billion now, right?
Right, and they want about only 500 million on the planet. I've heard that is their goal.
500 million or 500,000?
Oh, 500,000.
I've heard that also, or roughly a million, I've also heard.
You've heard a million as well. I've heard all different statistics over time.
Yeah,
but
the status of those lucky few is going to be that of lackey, serf, not even serf, slave.
So it's really kind of a corporate feudalism.
Exactly.
And you have on the pinnacle of this corporate feudalism what I call nothing less than Luciferian rituals. I don't know how else to describe them.
Well, you can say that, Bill, and then if we, depending, you know, whatever credence you put into Christian theology and Judaic and, well, all the Abrahamic religions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, Lucifer is the Lord of the Earth.
The prince of this world, that's right.
Yeah. So, you know, as I point out to many people, and it disturbs them when they say, you know, Jesus is Lord and Jesus controls the Earth or whatever, I said, no, if you're reading your scripture, is Lucifer. So we shan't be surprised, should we, if we find out that all these Luciferian schemes are in order and progressing as planned since day one.
Well, sure. I mean, even the other non-Semitic religions talk about some sort of fall or some sort of evil which permeates the world. It's, you know, all the religions really have some sort of account of it. Some sort of account, and it just seems to be coming true every day. Now, these groups were better at hiding years ago, but they don't really seem to care if they're exposed, because people are so dumbed down now.
Yeah.
No one's really going to do anything about it. And as I say to people, they'll say, well, I don't believe in Christianity or the devil. I say, well, what you and I as ordinary citizens believe matter.
No, because the devil believes in us. That's the problem.
It's the people at the top, what they believe matters.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what the people believe, because I say the devil believes in us. It's interesting in the Abrahamic religions that they have the same essential, maybe it's not in the text, I mean it's in the Apocrypha, but it is in the Quran, where God says to the angels, I mean, look at this hairless ape that I've created now. I think this is really a wonderful thing I've done. And Lucifer said, you know, we're not going to bow to that. I mean, why should we? I mean, you might think this is your little pet god, you know, but he's nothing to us. And they deliberately, from that time on, seek to undermine us, make us fall on our faces just as often, and to screw up just as often as we can.
And they're doing a good job.
Oh, yeah, because they are the great deceivers. They are the great deceptors, and we have to remember that.
Right. Okay, well, we're about out of time. I just want to give your web address out once more. That's www.bradandsherry.com.
And spell out and.
And, right, A-N-D, bradandsherry.com. And the book is Conspiracies and Secret Societies, The Complete Dossier. Brad, I really want to thank you for having you on the show. I've been reading your books for many, many years.
Thank you.
And I enjoyed the film Ken Russell made out of your book on Valentino.
You did.
I saw that on HBO in like 1980. So I had to get that in there. The book and the film were very good.
Thank you very much. I wish you would have followed the book a little closer.
Well, you know,
that's Ken Russell.
The book is always better than the movie.
Yeah, I
think
so.
That's the rule of thumb. Thank you very much, Brad.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much, Bill.